Like, why are we stackers? Because we have a pretty good sense for bullshit. Hey guys, Rafi and Phil here. I'm the Endgame Investor. Phil is the Bitter Draft. Together, we are the Bitter Endgame Draft, I guess. That sounds pretty good. I guess that could work.
Bitter Endgame Draft.
Yeah, we have a load of topics that Phil have suggested that we discuss this week, and we shall discuss them in a disgusting way. So there's four here that I have from your email, Phil. First of all, Phil, how are you doing this month, this week? What's going on?
Doing great. My son's school had a mini hyperinflation, which I'm going to give you an anecdote of. He had a medieval day at school, and all the kids dress in medieval garb, and they make crafts at home. So my son made potions, which fruit punch with little vials of fruit punch, where he sold his
Wow.
potions and little cardboard swords. And they and all the kids make something, and the school gives every kid 20 gold cardboard coins to spend. So you price it and you spend, and then you use it as the medium of exchange to buy something else. And the second he started describing this, I said, "This is going to end with some kids very unhappy." I just knew it, and that's exactly what happened. So the kids who got there, who the kids who sold first, were able to quickly go and exchange for other real things. But it quickly, you're not be, because the money when the money is just a worthless token like that, it has no. You have no desire to hold on to it quite. In fact, you have to get rid of it by the end of, it's only for the marketplace is only for 1 hour. So you have to sell your stuff, turn it to currency, and then get the other stuff in 1 hour. So it turned into a bit of a madhouse, apparently. And there were kids who ended up who had sold their goods, had the currency and nothing to buy, and they were very, including a friend of my son's, didn't get much.
Wait, how did your son do? Did you
Did
train him?
very well.
Did you tell him what was going to happen?
I think I'd have to ask him if I told him to dump the currency or not.
Okay.
If I didn't, I'm hoping that my life lessons to him can are imbued him with enough. But he did come home like a bandit, he looked like he robbed the place. So he did very
Wait, so Phil, are you saying that in analogous to a 1 hour time limited market, if the sagacious and benevolent central banks were to issue a CBDC central bank digital currency with a time limit on spending the tokens, that it would result in hyperinflation, just like your medieval school project here?
I'm pretty sure that is what would happen, Rafi. Yes.
I understand the lesson. That's beautiful.
Yes. No, it was a wonderful lesson. I think that was great. I even said when he came home and he explained, I said, "Son, the currency hyperinflated. You just watched a hyperinflation. That's what it looks like."
Wait, what was the purpose of this in the school? Were they trying to teach about monetary theory? What were they trying to do?
No, it's a medieval day at the end of the year. They do it every year for the fifth grade, and they have jousts with pool noodles in the morning, and other activity. I don't even know, but one of the things is a medieval market where they hawk their wares for. You know what's funny? Here's another little anecdote or a little thing that sticks into my mind. They're using, I mean, it's fake gold, but like the memory, but the genetic memory of us using gold as money directly is like still there, Like, so we're pretending this little cardboard token is a gold coin that has inherent value that we are
Right,
using.
it's the same thing with Bitcoin. Like, what image do they use? They use a gold coin. That's like
That's really true.
yeah, but it all comes back when it all comes back to me now, as Celine Dion once said, when you touch me like a coin and you hold me like that and you trade me like this, and it all comes back to me now. I don't really listen to Celine Dion. It just gets in my head sometimes.
Sure, you don't, Rob.
Yeah, I don't.
I believe you.
Okay.
I believe you do not listen to this movie.
Yeah. No, my kids recently saw Titanic for the first time, so I think that's why. Yeah. She's
That
14, so it's okay. Right?
I've actually never seen that. I've never seen Titanic. Somehow.
It'll make you cry. My daughters cried. They cried at the end when they were all dying. Yeah. And it's also there's a Federal Reserve scene in there. It's like very subtle, but the during one of the rich people's dinner, there's this whole thread on Twitter about how Titanic was really a fulcrum point in the effort to get the Federal Reserve founded,
Oh
because
yeah,
the
didn't some anti Federal Reserve sank.
yeah they sank with the boat.
Yeah, like the big leaders of the not no
Yeah,
central banking.
they were sailing to New York to try to counter the movement to establish a central bank. And the conspiracy theorists say they would have succeeded were it not for you lousy kids who sunk my Titanic boat.
Don't know, you think there's merit to that?
Who knows? There's so much stuff happening now. We were talking like what's happening in Israel and the rescue of the hostages, and I don't know if it's part of a plan or if it actually happened, and I want and maybe both, or I don't know
All
what to believe
kabuki
anymore.
there.
It's all just a big scrambled eggs in my brain, and 2020 really messed me up. Took me from being a I guess a mainstream thinker, but not monetarily a mainstream thinker, but not thinking that the government was capable of such evil horror in my lifetime, to realizing that, yeah, okay, that's it. That's where we are, and I gotta change.
Yeah, once you realize the TV is lying to you, it's like there's no. You almost lose your sanity at like what's real itself, and you have to like rebuild from what you see physically around you almost, you know? No, I went through the same thing.
We all have, except for like the cliff high people that were already there the whole time for other reasons. Okay, so we have four topics here that you wanted to get into. I'll let you lead them.
All right.
I'll say what they are here, and then we'll get to what we get to. I've got about 40 minutes, and then I gotta go. So the first one is,
One.
how long or short can the recovery period be post-crash?
Two. Two. Two.
Is employment in the endgame and post-endgame?
Three.
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 Are all wars banker wars? And we can apply this to my situation over here in northern Israel. I don't know the answer to that here. I guess we can hear your theories.
Four.
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 Are boomers to blame for all of this with their reckless spending and 50 years of deficits? Is it a generational rot? My answer to four is no, but we'll get into that at the end. So first of all, how long or short can the recovery period be post-crash, Phil? What do you think?
So I've been thinking about this quite a bit, and maybe I'm just a relentless optimist. I think as long, and this is with the caveat of we don't blow ourselves to bits or communists take over the government, I think it could be very, very quick. And my evidence for this is if you look at the financial panic in revolutionary France. As soon as they started trading in silver again, it all went away. Like all their problems just went away. And in fact, they ran Napoleon conquering half of Europe for the next 15 years, you know? So, and the other evidence, the Weimar hyperinflation, once it ended, right, they were able to start rebuilding. Now, didn't quite go the right way, but they were able to, keep things, rebuild on that. It didn't collapse into complete. Like, zombie apocalypse. In fact, none of them really did. The worst one I can think of is the Russian Revolution. And the Russian Revolution was only able to get off the ground because there had been 3 years of World War I, plus horrible domestic government mismanagement, plus, foreign Lenin was brought back in by the Germans to go be an agent provocateur. So I think Lenin walked into a perfect storm with which he was able to capitalize on. I don't, considering we haven't had 3 years of World War I yet. Now, if World War III kicks off, will I revise my estimates downward? Probably. But assuming we don't get World War III, and I really don't think without World War III that a communist takeover of the US government is possible. There's too many armed civilians, and there's too many people who are not interested in it. I mean, even in revolutionary Russia, they had 20%, 25% of the vote. They muscled their way in. So, I don't think they'll be able to muscle the way in. I really don't. Especially with the decentralized, all the state governments and stuff would, half of the states would go into open rebellion if we, put a hammer and sickle on where the stars are on the American flag.
Right.
So.
You could say on that our brush with totalitarianism with COVID has woken more people up to we don't want any of this and we are on to
Yes.
you. We have to remember that Russia went from basically feudalism, czarist government, to the absolute opposite, which also ended up extreme, ended up being the same totalitarian government anyway. Reading in the Diary of the Great Depression by Benjamin Roth, that there was a lot of communist itching for communism in the 1930s. And back then, it was before people really understood how murderous it could be. So it would be able to get more people on board with communist agitation, right? And I showed you a speech of a progressive reform rabbi, one of the guys that I've been researching from this diary, and his speech was basically advocating totalitarian dictatorship of the country and forget profits and just take over the entire economy and force businessmen to do what you want them to do. And after we do all this, we'll have a commission by Congress to study economics.
Yeah.
So it was much more possible in the 30s. I think it's much less possible now, even though we have all this woke movement. I think they're just loud, but most people are just like, hey, I just want to make money for my family and be left alone.
And I want to say for the people who think the people who the counterpoint would be the Great Depression. And so what I would say is that it was the socialist meddling of Roosevelt that extended this. I mean,
And
1929 would have
Hoover,
been a nasty.
started it.
Hoover too, yes, Hoover and Roosevelt. I mean, 1929 would have been a nasty crash, but you would have, you say, oh, well, I'm not as rich as I thought I was. Guess I'll go get another job and work harder and rebuild it, right? But when you can't, when the socialists come in, you can't find another job and you can't rebuild, then it lingers a lot longer than it would otherwise. So, if we don't fall into a socialist, spiral, which I don't think we will. I think this is the end. We are in it right now. So I think we're gonna bounce out of it. Could we collapse further into it? Technically, yes. I would say yes. It is possible we could end up with, Hugo Chavez style ruling in America. Maybe a general says, I don't like Trump or Biden. Get you both out. I'm gonna rule from now on, and nobody really rises up against him, and then he runs for president for life. These things do happen. I think it's unlikely in America. So I think, and other countries in the world too. So I think, barring those caveats, if you look at nasty crashes, even, I mean, this is going to be a big one. This is going to be the biggest one we've ever seen. I think you agree with that. I mean, it's going to be really, really big. But barring complete collapse, the stuff is still there. So it just gets reallocated. The purchasing power, like you said, gets reallocated from the holders of all the credit to the holders of the money, and you just get a reshuffle, and then you can build off of that, and it
Yeah,
will be
so
okay.
when you take it that way, what slows it down is when the people with all the credit go to the people with all the guns, which is the government, and say, point those guns at the people with the money so they can't take our stuff.
Yes.
Yeah, even though we're broke. So that's what slows it down. The stopping of that reshuffling from credit holders to money holders. The faster it happens, the better. And that's and if, well, now a thought's coming to my head, right? So the Great Depression was a deflationary phenomenon. The dollar was strengthening, prices were falling, and the dollar is what the Fed prints. That's its power base. So no one was thinking, oh, the dollar was going to collapse. The opposite was happening, and the Fed still wasn't so powerful back then. It was just starting its meddling, and that's what caused the boom. It's very rudimentary meddling in the 1920s compared to now, of course. But if we're talking about a hyperinflationary depression, which is what we're heading into, because the Fed is going to print every time that there's a crisis, then you're talking about the destruction of the dollar. If you're talking about the destruction of the dollar, then the powers that be don't have the power to meddle into the depression itself, and it has to liquidate with maybe some more violence, unfortunately, in the big cities. But I think if you're not in the big cities and the violence kind of burns itself out there, I don't think it's going to spread into the farms over like a 10-year period of Mad Max insanity. I don't see that happening. It could be wishful thinking, but I can't. I'm limited because I can't think that way, because if I start thinking that way, I'm
Yeah,
going to hide and not do anything and not live.
Well, I was watching. I think it was Bill Holter and Margaret Sniper. This is where this inspiration for this topic came from, because they had a much more doom and gloom outlook. And I think it's incorrect. I think, and like you said, maybe we're a couple of Pollyannas here, but I think that's wrong. I think it's going to be a nasty crash and a bounce back relatively quickly. And so let me give you some more examples. So, and this is with physical destruction. So Germany after World War II was, I mean, it was back, it was bombed back to the Stone Age. By the 60s, West, I mean, East Germany sucked, but West Germany was a decent place to live. South Korea was bombed in the Stone Age in the Korean War, so was North Korea. By, the 1970s, in fact, by the 1980s, Korea was a flourishing democracy. And North Korea sucks to this day. So you can see, the destruction doesn't necessarily preclude rebuilding. It's the totalitarian takeover that precludes rebuilding off of the destruction. I mean, Japan, likewise, Japan, and Japan, even in the 60s, Japan was, a flourishing country. So, are we in for a few bad years? Yeah, almost certainly. But do I think you need to build a bunker? And I don't. I don't.
I'm not building a bunker. I'm not doing that. So I
Yes,
can't get rid of
you're
that
gonna live in the
anyway.
world. Yeah. It also doesn't help, right? You need to get out into the community and help rebuild the world you want to build in. You can't hide in the bunker and wait for other people to solve the problem for you.
Actually, my neighbor, who I'm looking at right now, right out the window, is building a bunker. Not a bunker for the end of the world, but like a bomb shelter because we're being bombed. So
Yep.
he doesn't have one. It's called a Mamad. It's just a room with like double thick cement
Sure.
walls. So if there's a and now they're being installed all over the city, these little places like these safe houses. If the siren goes off, you just run into one of those and it's like a concrete box and then you wait for an explosion. I think it's just psychological. I'm not intending to do any of that. But of course, if like 1,000 missiles start falling here all, every second, then I'll head into a bunker, I guess.
Yeah, it must be scary. I mean, I've never experienced it. You have. It must be very scary to hear
This
the
scary thing, actually, this happened yesterday, right? My wife was teaching gymnastics. She teaches on Sundays and Thursdays at the gym, and the gym is right on the outskirts to the city. So I put this on the Silver Report on Chris's channel on Arcadia Economics. I put a picture of the fire that my wife was like right next to. It was right outside the fence of the city, and she re like she called the head of the school activity section people of the city and said, "Look, there's a fire right by the gym. Are we doing this today? This seems crazy." And she's like, "Oh yeah, Pikuda RF, what's it? Homeland Security. They said everything's fine. Don't worry about it. We'll just continue." And she's like, "No, this is not fine. I'm looking at this with my eyes, and there's a fire here, and it's about to come into the city." And then so like what the disturbing thing was is like during COVID, I was like, "Oh my God, everybody locked down. We're all gonna die. Everybody put a mask on. Shoot up your vaccines, etc." And now, when the city literally almost burned down, it was like, "Oh yeah, whatever, sure, it's okay." They're like everybody's perception is totally nuts.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Anyway.
People are not the best at threat assessment, at accurate threat assessment.
Okay.
Okay, so I think that answers the question for us. So we'll leave it at, with the caveats that we don't blow ourselves to bits or let totalitarians completely take over our governments, then the crash itself should not be that bad. We should have a quick recovery. There will be a lot of suffering for some people who, put their life savings into Roaring Kitty's GME fund, but everybody else, it'll be rebuilding. You can rebuild quickly. You can bounce off of it fairly quickly.
And the
All
last
right.
thing I'll say on this subject is that in order for a totalitarian group to take over, they need a lot of money. So you'll see what happened in Russia and what happened in Germany when totalitarians took over is the Nazis immediately went to the riches, went to the gold, stole everything from all the Jews and all the rich people. Not Stalin. Lenin did the same thing, stole from all the aristocracy, took all the money. They need money to do this. And they don't have any. Could they try to, find it from the gold bugs? That's going to be really hard to do. It's very decentralized. And I'm just hoping they can't find the resources this time to kick off a totalitarian dictatorship. It's very expensive. It's not free.
Very expensive. Fingers crossed. All
All right, so number
right. So the next
two.
question, was employment in the end game and post end game. So this came from you. You inspired me to ask this question because you were on another interview and you said, I'm not, I think it was with Mario. You said, I'm not planning to do this post end game. And that led me to think, well, what the hell? Well, like, what are we going to be doing? What does employment look like in the end game? And I mean, obviously, there's going to be a lot of unemployment in the end game, but what do you see happening? What do you see happening as far as employment in end game and post end game?
I don't know. I can only think of it in very broad strokes. The financial industry is going to be shattered because all they do is shuffle paper, which can be helpful when you are trying to make business more efficient. But when business is so lopsided and the paper shuffling just feeds on itself because of the inflation that's going on, you have entire industries that are going to be wiped out, like most of Wall Street. There's still going to be a Wall Street. There's still going to be stocks and trading and bonds and stuff like that, but it's going to have to be completely reorganized. And all these people that are doing basically nothing, mostly in academia and worthless doctors, I would imagine that the socialist health care system is not going to function anymore because it's controlled by the government, which has no money. Then people are going to actually choose their doctors based on good practices and people that actually help heal them, rather than shoot them up with whatever big pharma comes up with next, which I think is going to be semaglutide, which is Ozempic, which they're now touting as a preventative health, heart disease preventer or some crazy stuff like that. People are going to have to go into agriculture. They're going to have to learn how to build things and grow things and take care of their basic needs. It'll be faster than growing from an agrarian society to industrial because we already basically have the knowledge of how to farm. But you're going to have more people farming, more people growing smaller farms, decentralized instead of huge farms where the capital can't be maintained. And you're going to have more local farms, more local communities where you're going to have a job in your local city. I'm just imagining. You're going to have a job in your local city. There will be a local doctor, a local farmer. It'll be more self-contained economies for a while, and then once we have a monetary system going again, we can start hooking up and becoming a little bit more centralized and hopefully not as central as we are now, but something like that.
How does someone go from, let's say, working in finance or for, let's say, to farming quickly? That is one of my concerns. I know I was all Pollyanna, everything will be fine, but then I'm thinking, like, if I'm 40, like if it's like someone like me, right? I can farm. I do have things growing in the backyard. I don't have a lot of experience managing a large crop, and if it fails, I'm going to starve. So I'm questioning, like, I don't know, I'm just saying, like, how is somebody like me supposed to get agriculture skills in a hurry?
You might not need to get agricultural skills in a hurry. There are probably people around you who already have agricultural skills, and they are transposable when they say, Phil, do this, don't do that, follow my instructions. And then you just become a piece of capital that does what the leader of your collective is telling you to do. You're organized, hopefully, you're organized power based on how much knowledge you have and how much food your knowledge produces. And then you'll want to gain that knowledge. And hopefully, we can be imbued with the knowledge that we need to have instead of the knowledge on how to manipulate an inflationary system to make us a little bit richer. And like you said, like when you were talking about Rob Roy, right? Your best asset is your honesty and your hardworking nature and the fact that people can rely on you. It doesn't matter what you're doing, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, informal credit is the most important. And when you enter a society without the very structured hierarchy of laws, and I thinking like now, people get into each other's faces, but they won't. You don't want to be the first person to touch the other person because then you're going to get sued, and you have to, all this stuff. When all that goes away, you have to be known as like the person who can get something done. Because if you're not known as that person, no one's going to extend you any credit whatsoever. Are there skills we should be learning now while YouTube is up? Like, should I be watching certain YouTube videos now to prepare for employment post in-game, so either self-employment or from somebody else?
I guess you could, but it's always good to learn something that you want to learn. I would say go with what you really want to know, as opposed to what you think you have to know if the world comes to an end, but you don't really want to learn it, and it's just a burden because that's not going to work. So if you have like this urge to learn how to grow something in a basic way, even a basic skill, will get you pretty far, and then you can rely on your collective that you'll be part of to get you the rest of the way. But what I was going to say that I forgot is that as stackers, who would we be? We would be the investors in these smaller projects and these local projects, because we would have the capital to hire people, because that's going to be the money. So we'll be the capitalists of, we'll be organizing the people into these collectives to grow food for us. We'll be the investors. Well, hopefully I'm not just fantasizing. We'll be able to, and we have a pretty good sense. Like, why are we stackers? Because we have a pretty good sense for bullshit. And so what is our talent? We might not be able to grow things very well. We might not be able to shoot very well. At least, I have a gun, but I'm not like a professional shooter or anything. I don't know any weapons tactics, but I can spot bullshitters. So I think my job will be to get people together to say, okay, we need food. Who's good at that? Do I trust you? I'll talk to him. Who's good at building this? Who's good at engineering that? And I'll put them together in some kind of a company or collective and say, well, here's the money. I'll hire you and start building. That's what we're good at. We're good at collecting good people, which is what we're doing right now.
That's a good point. That's a very good point. Unfortunately, we're all too far away. Like we're so dispersed. But that's also a good thing. If we were all in one spot, then then everyone who wanted our gold could just come and get
Yeah.
it. Okay, so let me ask final thought on this. Are you doing anything in particular beyond stacking? Like, are you learning carpentry or masonry or farming or something?
I am trying to grow food in my backyard. It's succeeding to some degree. I do have chickens, and that has really enriched the lives of my children, who have learned to take care of them and take care of their minor problems like bumblefoot and collect the eggs and go around and get mulch and keep the soil fertile. So I'm trying to keep the value of my property higher in terms of what it can grow.
Have you
And
eaten any of your chickens?
I haven't eaten any chickens. No, I'm not eating my chickens. I've eaten their eggs.
Okay.
Right.
So you'll eat their babies, but you won't eat them.
I'll eat their unfertilized unborn children.
You just
No.
had like a moral, you had a moral sound to, I'm not eating my chickens.
No, I can't. My kids will kill me. They
I
love
know,
it.
yeah.
Yeah. And I do know ritual slaughter. I know how to kill a chicken. I know some guys who know how to kill goats and cows, who I've gone together with them to purchase part of a cow and a goat. Other than that, like, I'm interested in watches, so I'm learning how to put together a mechanical watch. Even though that might not have direct applications for anything, it does give my mind, which is not an engineering mind, I have very little talent in actual physical engineering logic.
Sure,
But
sure.
it gives me a basic idea of how machines are supposed to work, which I think could be useful, even though I'm not going to be fixing watches in an apocalypse or anything. So I'm just trying to do what I enjoy doing, and stay happy about it, and keep talking to people, and hopefully that's enough. And mostly, I'm just relying on God to keep things together as much as they can be.
All right. All right. The next one, the light and fluffy topic of our all wars, bankers' wars, and how it will apply it to your situation. But I want to say I'm absolutely convinced that statement is a correct statement because I went through I actually so I went through September 11th and I didn't sign up and I had a panic. A lot of my friends did. A lot of my friends, went to go rally around the flag and signed up.
Stand
And
up for the
I
army, you
felt
mean?
Army, yeah, military, Army, Navy,
Oh,
Marine.
right.
I mean,
Okay.
there's a whole bunch of my generation, and several of my friends died in the colonial wars, in Iraq and Afghanistan. My cousin was hit by an IED. He's thankfully mostly physically okay. Yeah, I mean, he's phys I mean, you wouldn't look at him and say, oh, he got hit by an IED, but he did get hit by an IED, and he has some issues with that. And he lost a couple of his friends, a couple of squad mates in that explosion. And I'm just. Looking at it now in 2024, I'm like, what did we do? We wasted 20 years, trillions and trillions of dollars to do what? But
I don't know.
nothing at all. And who got rich off of that? It was the military industrial complex and the banks that used the inflated money to pay for. I mean, the Kantian effect. They just sat next to the money printer, handed off the freshly printed bills to the military industrial complex. Everyone gets rich. except for, you know, anyone not standing close to the money printers. And everyone else, you know, ends up sitting around scratching their heads, like, what were we doing? Why were we there? What, you know, you almost forget why you're even there in the first place. So I at least in the modern context, and maybe you have a different view with your thing, I'm at least in the modern context, in the American experience, I might even include World War II in this, but everything since World War II, I think, has just been a banker's war.
So that is a statement that I agree with in a broad sense, that big wars benefit banks most because they print money to supply the weapons. So it's just people getting rich, who are the bankers. They finance the war. You don't have to be a conspiracy theorist or particularly educated or smart to come to that conclusion. When it comes to my situation over here, we're an outpost. We're a colony of the United States, and I don't want to be one. We've been a colony of the U.S. since 1967. In the Six-Day War, we were supposed to lose. We were getting squeezed by Egypt and Jordan and Syria and Lebanon all at the same time, and they were openly saying that they were going to invade and kill us all. So we attacked first, and we weren't supposed to. They were telling us not to do that, but we basically bombed their air forces before they took off, and all of a sudden they didn't have any air forces. And then we just conquered everything that we marched into, including Jerusalem. And then we even fired on purpose, I think, and though the official story is an accident, but we fired on an American ship called the USS Liberty in June 1967 and killed, like, I think it was either 19 or 39 or some high amount of US servicemen. I think the unofficial reason that is not spread around is that they were broadcasting our troop movements to the Egyptian army. So we attacked America in 1967, and we didn't get any weapons from them. And then even after despite that, or maybe because of that, they decided to make us an outpost, right? And they said, okay, we'll supply our weapons. You just listen to us. And ever since then, it's been that way. So our wars, I think the Israeli wars really, if you want to get conspiratorial about it, we are the weapons testing ground for US weapons. They give us weapons and then they tell us try it out on our Arab neighbors, and then the Israeli government has to give some kind of a matla, some kind of excuse to launch a new war, which I think might be why there were 8 hours of stand down orders from the army that didn't do anything when we were attacked. Because there had to be a war, and maybe they didn't know. Maybe they didn't know it was going to be a massacre like it was. Maybe they thought it was going to be a little bit of a skirmish that they could do something with for maybe a week or a month or whatever. And then maybe it turned out to be worse than they thought it was. That's what I think happened here. They wanted to test out new weapons, whatever they are, or new war tactics. So our wars are just a derivative of U.S. wars, and I think they're all in this together. Could I be wrong about that? Sure. And it doesn't change the fact that there's still hostages over there that we're forced into it. Just like, was there any chance that that America wasn't going to go into Afghanistan? Maybe there was a chance that they weren't going to go into Iraq, maybe. Fine. Okay. But still, they were going to go to war. You weren't going to stop that. And you're going to go into World War II after the bombing of Pearl Harbor, even if you say, which is probably true, that FDR knew about it in advance and let it happen because he wanted to go to war. Fine. Okay. But what are you going to do? It happened. We're in the situation now. That's it. We got to fight it. And it sucks because people in charge of it, I hate them and I think they're responsible for it. But what am I supposed to do?
So I right after October 7th, this is like the day after October 7th, they were doing a Vox Populi on the street of Gaza, and there was a woman who walked up. She had the beekeeper suit on, and she said, the leaders of Gaza have brought ruination upon us, because she said the Israelis are going to do what they're doing, they're going to start bombing and attack us. And all the leaders of Gaza are sitting in Qatar. And she specifically said they're sitting in Qatar, right? They're not here. So they have, brought hell down upon us where they don't have to experience it. And, I thinking, where do those billions come from that the leaders of Gaza have, right? Or, I wonder how much American money is just funding both sides of this, just to, like you said, either test weapons and also just to get the debt out. The debt must expand at an exponential rate. The debt does not care where it expands to. So if it expands into two sides shooting each other, then it's fine with it. And that makes me wonder, after the financial system collapse, I'm not saying as soon as everything collapses, everyone's gonna lock hands and sing Kumbaya in the Middle East. But if the funding dries up, I'm wondering if in a couple generations, people are just going to wonder what the hell they were all fighting each other for.
I don't think it's going to be that, because with the Jewish people, it's always a special case. They just want to kill us, and it's always been that way. But I do believe in a few generations there can be a very simple solution. Just pay the strong side has to pay the weak side to leave, give them money and go. And just separate. We have to live alone here, and we can't have other people near us that want to
So
kill us.
let me counter that point slightly. I read, and I wish I could dig it up. I don't know where I read this, but I read in Mandatory Palestine, so this is like the 1920s or whatever, that Jews and Arabs could like have dinner at each other's houses, and it wasn't a problem. I mean, there were some issues, but it wasn't like it is now, where it's like you can't live in the same area. So that makes me wonder. And there's Jews in Iran. I mean, a lot of them have left. There are Jews in Egypt. A lot of them have left, but there were, and they were living peacefully for, thousands of years. So it makes me wonder if the impetus dries up, will that hatred that you experience, will that go away?
Will
Maybe.
the hatred of the Jews ever dry up?
Because I think it's being funded. I'm absolutely convinced it's being funded now. At least the
Yeah, no,
military.
it's definitely being it's
Like,
definitely
hey, you wanna
funded.
well, fine, we'll give you. It's like what they do to Ukraine. They did the same thing to Ukraine. They go, put all these missiles on the border with Russia. We'll pay for you. Go
Look,
do
I know it's being funded. I understand that, and I don't want to be part of this funding. So the only way we can really win, and it's very difficult for me to like to surf the fine line between religious thinking and practical thinking here, and I have to unite them. I can't do anything else because our existence makes no sense here. What the hell are we doing here? And we came back. How was it, like you try to explain it step by, it doesn't make any sense. But we're back home, and what has to happen is that we have to reject the corrupt relationship we have with the United States and not rely on US taxpayers to supply anything for this, which means Israel has to have a leader. And there is one, there is a candidate for this. He's not very popular, but hopefully he can become very popular. I mean, we have this guy in El Salvador, we have the Milei example. These people can just like jump up and change everything overnight for good. So maybe hopefully that'll happen here. But we need a leader that will completely reject the inappropriate relationship with the United States, say we don't want any more of your weapons, we'll produce what we need over here, and that's a big risk. I understand that, and some people would consider it suicidal, but then again, the last war we won was 1967, when specifically we were not getting any help from the United States. And ever since then, we've lost every war. We've survived, but we haven't won like we have since 1967 at all, not even close to it. So we have to break the banker relationship and fight our own wars at our own risk. And you know what? I'll put it in God's hands, and I don't want it in America's hands, and you don't want it in America's hands. And if we die, we die, and we won't die, and everything will be fine. And that sounds crazy, messianic thinking. Well, I can't. I told you, I can't break from that completely. And I'm sorry, but I'd like to be friends with the United States, but I don't want to rely on them. And I think a lot of Jews think the same way, and we need a leader who believes that also.
Yeah. Well, let me finish the point on this thought. I went to an amusement park with my son 1 or 2 weeks ago, and we're wandering around, and it's a good park. It's a good park. It's a blue collar park. It's a working man's park. It's not Disney World. And there is every shade of color under the sun there. So there's black people, white people, Latinos, and tons of, and everyone's mixed as well. Mixed like you wouldn't believe. And everyone just get along. Everyone's getting along fine. And There are forces in America that are trying to say, like, you cannot get along. Like, you just cannot, you know? The history is too deep. It's too inbred. So that we must, you know, fight until one side wins and the other side loses. But everyone just kind of get along now. And it just shows you, like, you don't have to, if you don't listen to the TV, everyone can get along. Now I will say this. It absolutely takes both sides. You can't, if you show up and extend your hand, the other person slaps it away. Then you must fight. That is human nature. You must fight. So, but if both sides can agree to get along, then you can get along.
I think, I mean, I don't have any problem, I guess, morally with getting along with Arabs. I mean, a Druze guy just dropped off groceries at my house. We get along with the Druze perfectly well. And the Christian Arabs also, there's not much of a problem with them, but I guess Islam wants us out because we're a threat to
Well,
them
I mean, as
ideologically.
long as that happens, then your choice, the choice before you is made, because you can't, like I said, it takes both sides to agree to peace. Because if one side wants war, the other side gets war too. Doesn't matter what you want.
It sucks. It
Well,
sucks, and that's how it is right now. And in the short term, I hope the end game changes the equation, and so both sides run out of money. So if we fight, we'll fight with a lot less sophisticated weapons, and then we'll just come to a financial conclusion to this instead of a physical one. But either way, we're not leaving.
and look, you know, like I said, I hope my prediction is correct, and I hope that just dries up and people just go, well, what, we wasted a bunch of money, just like the Americans in Afghanistan. We wasted 20 years and tons of money and got nothing to show for it, and now no one wants any more wars. So maybe that'll happen there too, and everyone will just agree to live in peace.
And the best way for to find out if that can happen is that everyone else has to butt out. And
That was
that means
fingers
that
crossed, wasn't it?
our leadership has to push everyone out because all the bankers who want this war want to feed it. So we got to cut off the feed.
All right, final question, real quick. Are boomers, this is a viewer question to me, was are boomers to blame for this with their reckless spending and 50 years of deficit? I think we have the same answer. It won't take long. And is it a generational rot? My answer is no. There's no such thing as generational rot. People respond to the incentives in front of them. So if the incentive in front of you is to borrow money and build a swimming pool and buy a boat, you could not really have afforded without the debt. And live high on the hog and pretend you're rich and then dump everything on your children and grandchildren, then people are going to respond to those incentives. They did not know in the 1970s, they did not, I mean, some did, like Rothbard knew, but they didn't know that they were in an inflationary cycle. I didn't know I was in an inflationary cycle until I started watching Endgame Investor. So, you just live in the world you live in. You respond to the incentives you respond, that are presented in front of you. And it takes a powerful mind to say, oh, this is fake, and then say, okay, what's the reality, and what do I need to do to prepare for the abrupt return to reality? And most people, I've talked to people in my family who think I'm crazy. I've talked to my neighbors who think I'm crazy. You just speak to everybody, and there's a few people who get it and respond to it, and everyone else just thinks you're crazy, and they just live their inflated life. You can't do anything about it, and it's not their generational fault. It's not the fault that the World War II generation pampered their kids, because they were also experiencing inflation. So they said, "Well, we can live." That generation went through the Great Depression, so they said, "We're not going to let our kids go through that." And so they had, more pamper. And then the baby boomers grew up and had the millennials and the Gen Xers, who also were, quite pampered. Now the next generation, now we're at the end of this line. You can see Gen Z is not pampered anymore. They're stressed out. They hate their, whatever jobs are available suck and don't pay, and they can't afford anything. So the pampering's done. So the question is next is what happens next? Go ahead. What are your thoughts on?
I want to make a quick analogy, then I gotta go.
Okay.
The analogy is, you said all wars are bankers' wars. So bankers figured out how to control inflation between them. They figured it out in 1946 how to do it after World War II, Bretton Woods, and then fiat currencies, and we're in the same inflation since then. You could say it's even started in 1933. Wherever you want to start the count, doesn't matter. They figured it out. Now let's say instead of bankers, let's say operators of whorehouses, like brothels, whatever. They figured out that, like, they just decided to get together and like build brothels like in every city in the US really, really cheap and subsidize it and get the government to subsidize going to prostitutes for everyone. Would you be surprised if the entire society ended up addicted to hookers? I mean, is it their fault? I mean, the government was subsidizing the building of brothels everywhere. And so, what do you expect to happen to the society? So, we had corrupt leadership, corrupt bankers, and that led down to America conquering the world. And once an empire conquers the world, they look for other things to occupy their minds, and they're usually immoral. So it's a natural cycle of after America took over the entire planet after World War II, they got bored and they decided to print money and buy a bunch of crap. And we're still stuck in there and still addicted to it. So stealing from other people to buy more crap and all and some at some point soon, the crap ride is going to dry up and we're going to be left with nothing but dried crap.
That's a beautiful analogy, Ruffin.
Okay, thank you.
Well,
I
on that, may your dried turds turn into prosperity in your neck of the woods.
Yes, that's a, just like, you know, that's what dried turds do. They do turn into prosperity once you use them as fertilizer for your garden.
There you go. We'll end on that. Thanks, Ruffin. This is a great conversation.
Okay, yes, you know, thanks, and I will see you soon.